Sin acknowledges and pays respect to the traditional owners of the land on which the Sin office and studios stand, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. Sin also acknowledges and pays respect to the traditional owners of the lands our content reaches, as well as the radio stations we broadcast from across the country.
Welcome to Film 101, the show that looks at everything film, from the biggest new releases to awards hype, to interviews with practitioners working on films, right through to our film recommendations. Today we will be continuing our post-season podcast off-air, and we'll continue to do so in the near future, as there are plenty of new and exciting films that are scheduled for release. We will be recapping the biggest night in the awards calendar, albeit a week late, but nonetheless we are recapping it, the 92nd Annual Awards, Oscars rather. So joining me are the familiar voices of Darcy and Tom, and I am, of course, Arnie. Thank you two for being in to discuss, again, the Oscars. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to discuss, first and foremost. A lot of surprises, a lot of snubs, an interesting night, I think, as a whole. And we all watched it, I believe, from the comfort of our own homes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Somewhat,
indeed,
yes. Yeah. And what do you guys think of the coverage, first and foremost, of the Oscars? I know, Darcy, you've been voiceful about the telecast.
I mean, The Grammys were great. Like, what was it? Like, 15 musical performances? Like, it felt so weird. It was very confusing. Like, I loved Janelle Monáe, like, opening it. That was a really fun time. And then they basically had... what was his name? Chris Rock and Steve Martin basically being hosts, but then pretending they weren't hosts. Mm. So that was a weird way to start the night.
I thought it was a good way to start the night, to be honest.
It was confusing, though. Yeah. It left me I like them as hosts, and like just have them as hosts if you're going to do that. But then also half their jokes were about them not being hosts.
Yeah.
Well, the absence of an actual host has been talked about a bit. I think Kevin Hart was supposed to be the host.
That was last year.
Was it last year?
I don't know. We talked about this last year.
I think we did. I'm just bringing it up again, Tom. I think it's worth mentioning again, because it's been 2 years now without a host, right, properly for the Oscars. Mm. And I'm assuming they'll continue going down that route for the upcoming awards and next year and the awards thereafter.
I think it suits the telecast better, if I'm honest. It helps it to flow better, and it's not interrupted constantly by some personality you don't care about.
But they didn't really figure it out for me, because they still had a lot of presenters presenting other presenters.
Oh, that's true. So
that sort of thing just happened constantly.
Yeah, so they had Beanie Feldstein introducing so-and-so, and Kelly Marie Tran introducing so-and-so, and George McKay introducing...
Where it's like, that's the amount of time they... The host would be allocated, and they just gave it to other people to do
and
nothing, really?
They've already got somebody to fulfill this role. It's the broadcaster, announcer, narrator, that person.
Yeah, the backstage PA,
yes.
I wonder if any of these guys got paid, do you reckon?
Yeah, they do.
They do? They win Emmys for, the telecast and stuff.
Huh.
Yeah.
And they also get a little gift bag as well.
Oh, there's a lot of gift bags.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think this year there was, a golden vape pen for winners.
Oh, God.
I think
that's something to keep in mind as we go through the winners.
Yeah,
I think the gift bag
they get's worth almost quarter of a million or something.
Yeah, it's $200,000 or
something. Yeah, really. I think my brother told me they give away cruises as well at times.
They do.
But a lot of these people can, I think they donate some of the gift bags as well.
They could buy their own cruise ship with the amount of money they have.
I know, so it's quite pointless. But anyway, we'll jump into the Oscars recap now, and we're going to do this by order following... how the Oscars telecast was run. And the first award was Best Supporting Actor. Now, here we had pretty much the same lineup as the Globes.
Every other award ceremony.
It's these leading men. So you had Tom Hanks for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Anthony Hopkins for The Two Popes, Al Pacino for The Irishman, Joe Pesci for The Irishman, and Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And Brad Pitt was the eventual winner. No surprise there, I think, from anyone.
We were all happy that he won.
Mm, he won at the Screen Actors Guild. He won at the Globes. He won at several other ceremonies. It was a given at this point.
The ADG Awards, was that the one as well?
The American
Directors Guild, I think that's the one. Yeah, it was his time, really. After some incredible performances over his career, it's deserving. I think everyone knew that he was deserving of it. I think in the post the press conference that he did afterwards, people asked him whether his we call speeches were scripted, to which he said, you know, he's had people give him some jokes, but he's not, you know, he wants to keep it as natural as possible.
He had the best speeches, like, as a collective over the last, like, couple months.
He did, but a lot of people were questioning whether that was actually him, like, all of his material.
I mean, if you know you're going to, like, be on stage constantly, like, you may as well, like, pay a couple script writers.
Yeah.
Well, he needs those punchlines in there, and he had some good ones, delivered a couple of good ones over the course of that. So, yeah, I mean, Joe Pesci and Anthony Hopkins weren't even there, so you straight... They knew that.
I love that so much.
It's terrific, yeah.
Not secretly, but there's a part of me that really wanted Al Pacino to win, but it's Brad Pitt, so it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'll settle for that.
I agree.
But it took them 25 years to give Al Pacino his Oscar, so they're not going to probably give him another one.
Unfortunately. And, yeah, Joe Pesci was probably out playing golf, and Anthony Hopkins looking after his cat and playing piano in his house, which is what he continues to do on posts on Twitter, so...
That's great.
But he's 82, so, I mean, give the guy some credit.
Yeah, he can't fly at his age.
Exactly. The next was the Best Animated Feature category. So here we had How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, I Lost My Body, Klaus, Missing Link, and the winner, Toy Story 4. Now, just before we talk about this, I have to say that this category... I think the animations here were some of the strongest I've seen in years.
Definitely.
Some really good animations in there. Some surprising ones to have, you know, that the Academy went towards... you know, to put up into this category, especially, you know, I Lost My Body and Klaus. We didn't see them in other award ceremonies
with
the Globes.
I'm still annoyed at myself for not just assuming Toy Story 4 would win. I just, like, went against, like, maybe it's really like Klaus, and then, no.
Well, actually, I was reading a couple of the Honest Oscars polls that Hollywood reported in, and there were a couple there who said that Klaus was their pick, so... Well, that was interesting.
Okay.
A lot of people were hoping Klaus would win. I was hoping I Lost My Body would win. I was kind of... one side of me was saying Toy Story 4, even though I didn't pick it. Mm. And that's another thing I want to bring it to, because we each did our own sort of picks prior to this. I mean, I didn't voice them to you guys, but I was doing it as the ceremony was going along. So I thought we might as well.
Convenient.
Yeah. I was before each category. I'd be like, okay. I think this person's going to win. And so who'd you guys predict for this category?
I predicted Toy Story 4.
So I predicted Klaus.
I predicted I Lost My Body. So Tom got this one. Best Supporting Actor, we all predicted Brad Pitt. So we all got that one. Next, we've got Best Original Screenplay. Here we've got Knives Out, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and the eventual winner, Parasite. Who are your guys' picks for this one?
My prediction was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I think Parasite would have been my choice. I'm just surprised that it actually won, really.
I think that's, like, the theme of that. Like, I still picked Parasite to win, I think, more out of just my heart over my head. And then it's just so satisfying when what you want to win actually does. And he's just such a great speech giver. Mm. Like, he's an incredible...
Even though they're being translated. But yes, he is.
Yeah, he could be saying rubbish for all we know.
Yeah, I know. The translators just, like, keep it afloat.
And this has always been, I think, like, the cool movies category.
Mm.
Like, over the years, this has always been the ones where it's like, if you want to, like, recommend people 5 movies for the year, it usually goes down to the original screenplay list. Because the Best Picture one, it's always, like, very political and, like, how, like, the 9 shape out, like, stuff like Joker ends up in there, where it's, like, original screenplay, it seems to be a lot more consistently good.
Yeah, it seems to me that screenplay is the award that should win Best Picture that doesn't.
Yeah.
A lot of the more technical sort of awards, I think, are better in terms of that. Like, at least more, they're professionally handled as well. When you've got obviously when you present it to the presenter, and I made note of this, I'll mention it after again, but like they give the sort of the most clear-cut speeches. Mm. It's like they thank you, they need to thank. Because at the end of the day, it is you're acknowledging the winners of films, you're acknowledging cinema in some sense. So you're representing cinema when you stand up there.
Yeah, the technical winners, they know they're just one cog in the wheel, and they, you know, consider that when they're doing their speeches, whereas in the other categories, they all see themselves as the most important part of the movie.
Greatly worded, Tom. That's how I would have put it.
Thank you.
Next, we've got Best Adapted Screenplay. So here we have... The Irishman, the winner, Jojo Rabbit. We had Joker, Little Woman, and The Two Popes. What were your guys' picks for this one?
I was gunning for The Irishman because I thought it's a Scorsese movie. Steve Zaliden, I think that's his.
Zalian.
Zalian, beg your pardon. He has won previously for Schindler's List, so I thought the Academy might be leaning towards that. But no, Taika Waititi, complete surprise. Did not see this coming at
all. So he won the Adapted Screenplay Award at the Writers Guild, I think, like a couple days before.
Oh,
so
that's like, why. I wasn't following the Writers Guild.
Yeah.
And I think he was asked...
too obsessed with this stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, so he was the odds-on favourite to win this. I wanted Little Women to win just because I think as, like, a specific, like, work of adaptation, it was the most interesting movie of the five. Like, it actually did something with the original text instead of, like, adapt a book that no one's read into a movie people have seen.
Yeah, we don't want a page-for-screen remake, essentially.
Yeah, and, like, I feel like that's where the thing usually comes from. And I think Jojo Rabbit's kind of that.
Mm.
But I don't know anyone that knew what this book was.
So did you pick Jojo Rabbit?
No, I picked Little Women.
Yeah, I picked The Irishman as well, so I think we all had a miss here. Taika Waititi was asked the question in his press conference. I think you guys saw, you might have seen this as well. Something to do with, someone asked him something to do with what could be, how could writers be like have it easier, I think, like in the future. And he said that Apple should fix their mouses or something, or the keyboard,
the keyboards. Yeah,
he's like, Apple should fix their keyboards. He's like, it was the best rant, like a minute and a half of him just ripping into Apple keyboards. It was so fun. It was so relatable. That's why
I'm happy he won, because like this was a real like big chance he took on this, making this movie, and the people that like took a chance on him to make, write, direct, and star in this movie.
Because this is really contentious material. Especially in Hollywood.
Yeah, like there's a million versions of this that doesn't work.
Next, we've got Best Live Action Short. So here we had Brotherhood, NAFTA Football Club, The Neighbor's Window, which was the winner, Saria, and A Sister. What were your guys' picks on this? I hadn't actually seen any of these ones, so I couldn't comment.
I can't even remember what my pick was. I think I just took a stab in the dark and said, yep, that one.
I think I took a stab at Brotherhood, yeah.
Mm. I didn't get it anyway.
I picked Brotherhood.
Brotherhood as well.
The winner though, The Neighbor's Window, the director's been nominated 4 times, which I found out as he was walking up, and like he's been nominated 3 previous times for, I think he's done documentary feature and I think a different live action short.
And he's finally won.
Yeah.
There you go.
Good on him.
Next we've got Best Animated Short. Here we had Dakira, which means daughter, Hair Love, which was the winner, Kit Bull, Memorable, and Sister. I picked Hair Love. I don't know what you
have
guys...
Have you all seen Hair Love?
No.
It is so good.
But I saw the Twitter community really rallying for this one.
It is incredible. It is 6.5 minutes. It's on YouTube right now, and it's arguably better than all of the animated features.
I went for Kit Bull because it was partly funded by Pixar. So it's one of their little shorts.
Is that pre-movie ones? Yeah.
Well, not a pre-movie one, but they've got this program at the moment where they give funds to certain directors to help them bring their movies to life.
Like with Bao, was it last year? Bao?
So not quite, because that was an in-house production.
Yeah.
Okay, right. This was like funding an external sort of project, was it? Okay. Next, we've got Best Production Design. So here we had The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was the winner, and Parasite. What were your guys' picks for this one?
I went for Parasite for the house alone, because that huge house they had in Parasite was constructed from the ground up specifically for the film. So I thought, given that information, then they'd be leaning towards that. But no, they went for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is fair.
You can't argue with it.
Yeah, because the way they recreate 1960s Hollywood is just flawless.
I picked that as well, because the whole... they said they like streets, they would have like... redesign, and they like the set design and everything, they had some great work on
it. And the production artist Barbara Ling and the set decorator Nancy Haig, they're like legends of the game, basically.
Well, they've been with Tarantino multiple times in the past so they've worked with him.
They both gave a good speech as well.
Yes, they did. Yes. Next we've got Best Costume Design. So here we've got The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which was the winner, and Best Costume. The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Woman, which was the winner, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Here we've got, Little Woman won. What were your guys' thoughts here?
Picked it.
I'm happy it won.
Yeah.
Did you pick it as well?
I picked Jojo Rabbit because it won the Costume Guild Award. But
I don't know. I had a feeling Little Woman, this was its second.
Because the Academy loves period dramas and they love pretty dresses.
But the hard thing was is that every movie was a period movie. Which
it
is
was,
like the frustrating
this was
part
an
of
even
this.
Older period.
Yeah,
maybe.
The furthest dated back. I just went for Jojo Rabbit just for like the World War II.
I don't know. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I mean, it felt like they just walked into an op shop, really.
But they were really good. Like, they were good. I would have worn.
I mean, there were some.
The Joker I don't understand in this category. There was like one costume, I guess.
The red suit, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, but they, you know, they had those 80s vibes as well, like 70s, 80s.
But he was wearing like a tan, like,
but it's, we're not just focusing on the central character, it's everybody involved.
But the movie's only about him. That's like, that's where I get hung up on the costume design of that movie. Like, I didn't recognize anyone else.
We are outsiders in this regard, because none of us really appreciated Joker as much as everybody else did. So
That's true. Yeah.
Jim Carrey did say with Brad Pitt's attire, he's like, he must have taken inspiration from Ace Ventura.
His
attire from that. So he was like ripping it to Brad Pitt for that. It was funny, just a side note. Mm-hmm. Best documentary now we've got. American Factory was the winner. We have The Cave, The Edge of Democracy, Fosama, and Honeyland. For me, this one was a bit of a surprise. I picked Fosama. I know, Darcy, you picked American Factory.
This is arguably one of the best movies of the year, let alone best documentary. And it was the first movie by the Obamas' production company.
So they're tapping into films as well now, the Obamas.
They are.
Yeah.
Good God. They're everywhere, aren't they?
Once you leave office, there's not really much left for you to do.
Well, you can, start making films.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see. Hopefully Trump doesn't do the same.
Oh, no.
Got Dinesh D'Souza. He's making... That's pretty much the same thing.
Oh, God. Don't bring him up.
Probably not the time and place.
Next, we've got Best Documentary Short. So here we've got In the Absence, Learning to Skateboard in a War Zone, If You're a Girl, which was the winner. Life Overtakes Me, St. Louis Superman, Walk, Run, Cha-Cha. What do you guys think of this category?
So I predicted this one. Ticks all the boxes. You know, it's a story about female empowerment. It's taking place in a war zone. The Academy loves that sort of thing.
And from all accounts, it is the best movie of the five as well.
Yes.
Tom, you say it in a way that sounds like... Almost like that they favour those sort of things more than these sort of other...
That's exactly shorts. What I'm saying, Army.
why do you think that is, Tom?
Because the Academy, it loves to look progressive. That's all I can say on that matter.
Right. Interesting thought.
Okay. I do like John Cho when they announced all the Oscar categories that this is the one that he said had the best list of names. Because just every name on this is just a great... It's just fantastic.
Like the titles?
Yeah, just every title.
Next, we've got Best Supporting Actress. So here we had Kathy Bates in Richard Jewell, Laura Dern for Marriage Story, and she won, Scarlett Johansson for Jojo Rabbit, Florence Pugh for Little Women, and Margot Robbie for Bombshell. Any surprises here for you guys?
No.
No?
All the acting categories, we knew what was going to happen. Mm. I think that was the most uniform like quadrant of winners we were going to get.
I mean, Laura Dern's pretty much swept everything up to this point, and
it's such a weird thing as well, because like all four of them, it's kind of like surprising that they won if we didn't know anything beforehand.
That's true. Yeah.
Where it's like, it's amazing that Laura Dern finally won her Oscar, but then because we were like assumed it was going to happen for 3 months, it didn't feel satisfying.
Mm.
And I think Scarlett Johansson is, I don't know how long it's been since a woman's been nominated in two. Like, since
it's
she's been nominated,
Best
Supporting and Best Actress. Mm, yeah. She had both nominations. Next, we've got Best Cinematography. So we've got The Irishman, Joker, The Lighthouse, 1917, which was the winner, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, or Roger Deakins was the winner in that instance. Were there any kind of surprises here for you guys?
He was always going to win this.
It was a surprise when he won Blade Runner 2049.
I don't think so.
I mean, because he'd been nominated for so long, and for him to finally win, it was kind of like this real euphoric moment. But now that he's won the award and everyone knows who he is, it's sort of like expected that he'd win this one.
And he was like co-directing this, essentially. Like, he was so important to that. And I like that he actually attributed all the actual camera operators for 1917, because it wasn't just him behind a camera for 2 hours.
Mm.
And I can see him going on to win a couple more after this. Hopefully, we'll see. But
was he doing the next Coen movie?
He's done almost every single one since.
So this is the first one with just Joel alone. So I don't know if he'll be doing it.
We'll have to come back to that point, won't we? Next, we've got Best Sound Editing. So we've got Ford vs. Ferrari, which was the winner. We've got Joker, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. What do we tip here, guys?
So this is sound editing. I picked 1917 for both of the sound categories, but I'm so happy Ford v Ferrari won.
Yeah, I should have picked Ford versus Ferrari for this one, like let alone because they had a massive variety YouTube like explanation of their entire thought process for like 20 minutes. Like, okay, they're definitely pulling for this award.
I did pick Ford versus Ferrari upon seeing the category, because I just thought to myself, I'm like, if any film had an amazing soundscape last year, it was Ford vs. Ferrari. Yeah. That one that was like that you had to see in cinema to kind of really feel that.
And it had the best use of Atmos, Dolby Atmos, I think, out of any movie last year. I do wish these, the two sound categories, went outside of the, like, Best Picture nominated ones. Like, Ad Astra is the only one of the 10 nominations that was, like, an obscure pick. Where I feel like the Sound Guild just kind of only watches a couple movies. It's definitely an old, like, collection of voters as
well. They could have easily gone for an action blockbuster there just to, like, drum up support.
Yeah, and I don't get Star Wars still getting sound editing awards for Foley work that was done in 1977. Like, it is, like, still the same sound effects that they created in the 70s, which is, like, it needed to win then. I think it did.
It did
win best sound for the original Star Wars. And, like, they haven't really ventured past that point I think in any of the movies since. I mean,
they got John Williams there, so there you go. That's
He's not in charge of sound editing.
I know, but he's there. They got him there.
He shouldn't have been nominated. There was not much added to the Rise of Skywalker.
No. I'm going to pull you up on that, because I think that this score out of the other two sequel films is probably the best one.
But what was added, though?
Everything.
But I don't know what theme was added. Like, the Rey and Kylo themes are what I loved about the original.
It felt like, to me, he was blending all of his work together, and I think that's what the Academy wanted to acknowledge. But we'll get
that's
to
why
that.
We acknowledge him for the other one. Yes. All right, we're getting ahead of
ourselves. Next, we've got Best Sound Mixing. So here we've got Ad Astra, Ford vs. Ferrari, Joker, 1917, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You guys picked...
1917.
Yeah, pick 17, yeah.
I picked Ford vs. Ferrari, so I missed out on that. Yeah, not much more to say on that category, I think. Next, we've got Best Film Editing, Ford vs. Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, and Parasite. I picked Ford vs. Ferrari here. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, Ford vs. Ferrari. I mean, it couldn't have been anything else, really. I mean, those really well-edited car chase sequences, you know, the pacing was just brilliant. So, yeah.
I was pulling for Parasite, because I think that was edited. I think the montage in Parasite alone was, like, one of the best sequences of 2019. But I think Ford vs. Ferrari as a whole is really well edited. It was strange to... Like, I guess The Irishman was nominated because of Thelma, and, like, she's been around for so long, and...
There was a part of me that thought that maybe she would win, but...
Has she won before? I assume
she has.
The Departed. Sure. She won for The Departed, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, so they all won for The Departed after 30 years of, like, why haven't we nominated these people?
Next, we got Best Visual Effects. So we've got Avengers Endgame in here, The Irishman, 1917 being the winner, The Lion King, and Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker.
This was a real surprise to me, because I saw a lot of practical effects in 1917, but not a lot of, like, special computer-generated stuff.
But it was all the cutting, the seamlessness cutting. Okay. I think that's the main thing that got this the win. I picked The Lion King just because I thought... It looked like... one thing you can say about the Lion King movie is that it looked great. And I thought that would have been enough to give it a win. But I like that, like, it's kind of an obscure pick to get the one that isn't, like, massive CGI. We are aware of CGI. It's the one that actually, like, hides it.
Yeah.
And, like, the trick... Like, the impressive part of 1970 is the hiding of the visual effects.
That's a fair point, actually, because one of the most iconic scenes in that movie is where they got the burning church, and that was all done in front of a green screen.
Really?
Well, yeah, with, like, the church added in afterwards. Yeah. And I said to myself, whoa, I did not pick that one at
like,
all.
Like, yeah, I love 1917, but I feel like the, like, making of documentary is going to be so much better.
So it's kind of going to be like the Heart of Darkness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Next, we've got Best Makeup and Hair. So we had Bombshell, which was the winner, Joker, Judy, Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, and 1917.
Oscar-nominated Maleficent, Mistress of Evil is a strange title.
I think we all picked Bombshell here, didn't we?
I believe we
did. He's a legend of the game.
Yeah, he won for Darkest Hour as well.
He did.
With Gary Oldman. No surprises there. Next, we've got Best International Feature Film. We've got Corpus Christi, Honeyland, Les Miserables, Pain and Glory, and the winner, Parasite. No surprise again. They've been winning everything up till this point. So,
Like that Honeyland was nominated here. Like, I obviously am annoyed that Portrait of a Lady on Fire wasn't nominated, but Honeyland being a documentary being put into this category is really rare, and I like that was there.
And that's one of the changes they made to the category this year, is that a foreign film didn't have to be a feature-length narrative. It could be a documentary.
Oh, so that's why it's like one of the first time, because they changed it. Ah, okay.
Best international feature, not best foreign anymore. Mm.
Yes.
Best original score, Joker won. Then we have Little Woman, Marriage Story, 1917, and Rise of Skywalker. No surprises here, I think, as well. I think
she's had possibly like the best 9 months of any person on Earth. Yeah, she's won a Grammy, two Emmys, and an Oscar in 9 months.
And a Globe.
And a Golden Globe, which isn't part of the EGOT, but you can add to it to...
Spice it up.
Got to wait for the Joker or Chernobyl Broadway show to get the Tony.
Next, we've got Best Original Song. So we've got I Can't Let You Throw Yourself Away from Toy Story 4. I'm Gonna Love Me Again from Rockman, which was the winner. I'm Standing With You, Breakthrough, Into the Unknown from Frozen 2, and Stand Up from Harriet. I think we all picked I'm Gonna Love
I went for Into the Unknown. Oh, so I thought that Frozen 2 would win because the same husband and wife pair had won 6 years previously.
See, that's why I thought they wouldn't win. Because they're like, we already gave it to you for Frozen, the better song.
Yeah, it's just, but yeah.
This is a really bad year for original songs.
It really is. I mean, Elton John, I love him to bits, but seriously, this song above all others?
Yeah, And I think the only great performance of the night was Cynthia Erivo for the Harriet one. And like, I feel like the live performance was better than the movie one.
That's not how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, so I feel like...
Harriet wasn't a great film, if I'm going to be honest.
That doesn't help.
I have. It wasn't that great.
Have you... Yeah. Cynthia Erivo is great, though.
She's
going to win an EGOT multiple times, I think. Mm. She's incredible.
Next, we've got... So, we've reached the final four categories rather quickly, if I must say. Mm. We've got Best Actor. So, here we had Antonio Banderas for Pain and Glory, Leonardo DiCaprio for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, the winner, Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, and Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes. It was his time.
I like to tell myself that because he was basically doing the same performance as his performance in The Master, that this was basically him winning for The Master.
I'm just going to
believe that.
And it's interesting, another win for a Joker character or someone playing the Joker. Yes. Obviously, Heath Ledger not being
the second
around.
Win for someone playing the Joker and the fourth time an Oscar winner has played the Joker.
Oh, okay.
Because Jack Nicholson's played him as well. Jared Leto's played him as well.
Yeah, it's a... weird history for that character now.
Do we have any surprises with... I mean, Antonio Banderas was sort of... Up until a point, he was sort of my pick. Based on... Yeah, it was a terrific performance in Pain and Glory and his win at Cannes. He won the...
Year for the Oscars is like the first year I'm really... Like, I'm hoping in the future they change it, that all of the Guild Awards and all the previous awards are done after the Oscars. Because I feel like the inevitability of these sort of awards kind of take the air out of these sort of wins. Because like Joaquin Phoenix is like an incredible actor. Like it's amazing that he finally won an award, but we all just kind of accepted it in November, which just felt super weird.
Next, we've got Best Actress. So we've got Cynthia Erivo was here for Harriet, Scarlett Johansson for Marriage Story, Saoirse Ronan for Little Women. I finally got the name.
Yeah.
Down pat. Charlize Theron for Bombshell and Renee Zellweger for Judy, and she won. Have you guys seen Judy up until last?
Not many people have.
No one's seen Judy.
What was surprising though is that she won at the Independent Spirit Awards the day before, which is like the indie film cred award winners. So like Willem Dafoe won there.
Yeah.
Uncut Gems. Adam Sandler won.
Awkwafina won
there
at those same awards, didn't she?
No.
No, oh, that was another
Nine A one.
Yeah. Okay.
The supporting actress.
That's
for,
good.
The Farewell. But so it was impressive to see her even win in that kind of group of people. So it's hard for us to say if it's a terrible.
I've mentioned this on the podcast before. Everybody praised her performance when the movie came out. Yeah, they said the movie's ordinary, but Renee Zellweger is great.
So. And like really, I feel like for the most part, Cynthia Erivo probably was great in a Harriet that people didn't really like, and Charlize Theron in Bombshell. So I think like three of the five are like they were great in movies that were kind of lacking. Whereas like I feel like the two people pulling for the most was ScarJo and Marriage Story and Saoirse and Little Women. I think just because they were the two best movies of that five.
True.
So I wonder if we're just kind of pulling for the best movie to win regardless of the person.
I think to some extent, but I mean, if it's...
I think maybe the best person as well, because Saoirse Ronan has had a phenomenal career, and it's
amazing. She's 25.
And she's 25. She's the same age as me.
Yeah, but I do wonder, like, how many she's going to get up to until she finally gets her one.
Yeah.
Well, look, you can notice quite easily a great performance in a bad film, but to notice a great performance in a great film, that's, you know, another sort of...
Well, Little Women was filled with great performances, though.
I know. Well, and credits to Saoirse Ronan then for you know, really standing out in that sense, you know, to land that nomination.
I think she sticks with Greta, then I think she'll win one eventually.
I would say so, yeah, I agree.
Next, we've got Best Director. So we had Martin Scorsese for The Irishman, Todd Phillips for Joker, Sam Mendes for 1917, Quentin Tarantino for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and the winner, Bong Joon-ho for Parasite.
This changed, like, that whole three-hour telecast. This went from, like, kind of knowing what was going to happen and, like, half paying attention to, like, up out of your seat kind of enjoyment.
Who were your guys' picks?
I picked Sam Mendes.
Yeah, I picked Sam Mendes as well in 1917.
I think I picked Sam Mendes as well. But did you guys see his reaction?
Well, he thought he was going to win, which is fair enough. I know, we all did.
That's the... Yeah, I know. Oh, my God. I
you
got
it.
Every
that's
time I think about
that's
it
gonna
now.
Suck.
And then, of course, in his acceptance speech, he praised Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
He praised Quentin Tarantino. And the other two was like,
you
were nominated as well.
He gave the other ones. Yeah.
But like, he says
there's a tier system.
There is.
And
there
I feel
really
like you need
is.
To acknowledge it.
Next, we've got Best Picture. So here we've got Ford versus Ferrari. This was basically the biggest award. The big award. Ford versus Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Joker, Little Woman, Marriage Story, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and the winner, Parasite, making history. Thoughts, guys? This is huge. It's huge in South Korea now as well.
This was absolutely huge. And the reaction from the crowd in the Dolby Theatre, it was, I mean, compared with last year, Green Book, when there were a lot of really shocked people and some who refused to applaud, I think that Spike Lee was so annoyed that he threatened to walk out of the theatre. And this year, like, everybody was standing up, everybody
they tried
was...
to turn the lights off mid-speech
and then
Tom
told
Hanks
them,
rallying them.
It's just... This is what the Oscars should be about, just beautiful moments like this.
Beautiful moments, but also, you know, acknowledging what probably was the best film of last year.
Well, definitely.
It's just never
happened.
Yeah.
I think in the week that we've had since this, I think it's kind of made me angry that we didn't get this for Moonlight.
Yeah,
like
true.
That kind of spoiled that year where it's like this celebration would have happened for Moonlight and it just wasn't allowed that chance.
It was taken away.
That's pretty much the only two circumstances of like the best film winning.
I'm starting to question whether that was intentional then from the
someone backstage deliberately handed them the wrong envelopes.
Yeah. Because that company got fired. They definitely didn't do that intentionally.
Did they get fired?
They did,
the management company.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
They're never working at the Oscars ever again.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Good things, though. Like, I'm so happy that the international film won. Like, it's one thing to celebrate diversity, but it's one thing to celebrate the, like, international diversity, which is something the Oscars have never really done.
I did mention this, I was on my blog, I mentioned this, but you could tell it wasn't just lip service. There were people who genuinely wanted this movie to win.
Yeah.
Hence the reaction.
I think we should have taken more from the SAG ensemble win, because like the acting SAG award body is the highest number of voters in the Academy. So I think we should have taken that as like more indicative of what's going to happen.
I mean, again, at the end of the day, it's the most deserving, I think, out of that bunch. And there was some, like, when you look at those films, they're all pretty great. Jojo Rabbit was probably the most questionable in terms of being nominated for a lot.
Well, I mean, Jojo Rabbit is a good movie, but when I look at it, I don't see it as, like, Oscar caliber. I see it as, like, a really fun, heartwarming movie. And I suppose, I hate to bring this up again, but Marriage Story, I still can't see the...
I still love it, but it would have been such a weird Best Picture win.
It would have been true.
Like that sort of movie never wins. Like a Kramer versus Kramer
one. I reckon if Joker had a won, there would have been rioting.
That's just the one that would have aged as poorly as Green Book, and I think 1917 would have aged just like neutral.
Yeah,
that would have been like if La La Land won over Moonlight, where it's like, oh yeah, that one.
Well, and this is going to be...
Where Parasite, it actually got boosted so much more because it won.
And it's going to be a huge talking point as well when people look... But like, I think it's going to be a moment that people, you know, in 20, 30 years will look back and probably study in some way as
Parasite
well.
Yeah, Parasite is going to be the movie that stands the test of time. It's going to be like a Hitchcock movie or a Chaplin movie. It's going to be something looks back on.
Which is wild to think that it's a non-English movie. Like, these sort of things don't happen.
But mind you...
Like, this is... Like, after it won, it got put out wide into Village and Hoyts, and it made 600,000 post-Oscars.
It's still showing today.
And in the UK, it was released a week before the Oscars, and then when it won, they had to, give it a wide release.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's out on DVD right now in Australia, but you can't get a copy because they're all sold out.
Yeah, see, that's
They're
that's
out of
incredible.
Stock.
Yeah.
Yeah. But mind you, it's not just, you know, they're not just giving Parasite this award because, you know, let's pave the way
like,
for future.
Yeah, there are countless, like, international movies that they could have been the first to win it.
Yeah.
Mm. And, like, to actually give it to an incredible movie.
Like, it could have gone the Roma last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Could have. It was Roma and Green Book. I picked Green Book, actually. Yeah. But there was what was the other sort of talking point films of last year?
Last year was 2018.
I think The Favourite was in there.
Yes, The Favourite, yes.
There was a couple of other, I can't remember everything.
It was basically Roma versus, like, the old angry people at Netflix.
Yes.
That was the talking point of last year. Which, like, I think it's worth talking about Netflix, that they did not do well. They had 24 nominations and had 4 wins.
Yeah, so their documentary won, Laura Dern won for Marriage Story, but we've also got to acknowledge that Martin Scorsese... 10 nominations for his movie, no wins.
That's the second time he's done it.
And it's the last time that happened was American Hustle back in 2013.
That got 10 nominations.
Yeah, that got 10 nominations, no wins. Do you not like American Hustle?
It's fine. It's not 10. It's not one less than Lord of the Rings.
Okay, no, that's fair.
You're listening to the Film 101 podcast on Sin. We're going to talk about what we basically took away from the Oscars, our most memorable Oscars moments, and the biggest talking points from the Oscars, you know, according to us, obviously, what we thought. Okay, for me, I think in many ways to last year, they were sort of tedious, in my opinion. And as sort of Darcy will mention as well, after a telecast mess, you know, there was a lot of ad breaks that took incredibly long, and sometimes, like, they wouldn't return to the Oscars broadcast in time for the start of a segment, so they'd cut into, like, the start of a speech. I think there's a lot of issues in sort of how they manage that.
And the feed cut out at one point as well here in Australia.
Oh, that was intense. Yeah.
That was the best actress.
Yeah, towards the end.
It's like, how could they?
That's right. So that's still something that that was striking for me. You know, it's the biggest awards event in for cinema in the world, and you can't get these simple sort of things right, or you just don't want to.
But there was a lot of weird decisions, I think, made for, like, the performance. Like, I don't know what either of you thought of Eminem showing up music in movies. And
my reaction was the same as Martin Scorsese's.
Why is this, like, happening, and can I leave?
was that whole montage of clips literally a build-up just to show Eminem in 8 Mile and then have him perform?
That's it, yes.
So it served no other purpose beyond that, from what I'm saying.
And they're, like, annoyed that, like, speeches aren't happening fast enough. And he's like, no, this is where we cut the half hour out that it went overtime.
Scorsese, I think people were taking photos of him supposedly sleeping. I don't think he was sleeping. I think the light was just really bright.
That was a very disapproving Martin Scorsese. It's like, I can't believe.
he's like I've been to every awards, like, Oscars that I've been nominated for, and this one's probably the worst. I don't know. It looked that way, at least.
He's every dad at a rap concert, really.
He didn't ask to be at an Eminem concert. That's fair.
He was there with
no one else did either. This was sprung on people at, like, the, well, not at the last minute, but essentially it was kept hush hush.
Yeah, because they don't get a playbill to find out.
There was a contingency in place so that if word did get out that Eminem was performing, they'd just, you know, cut it all together.
Well, they wouldn't. Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and then probably wouldn't have showed up. Let's be
honest. True,
But yeah, he was, even in his performance, I think he was struggling to keep up with his own lyrics or something.
Yep.
I was seeing a lot of points.
I know his song. It was like 20 years ago. Yeah.
I know, but, like,
remember, when you're recording a song, like you're recording a podcast, you can cut and paste things. You don't have to get it.
Well, no, he
can
definitely do it live. I just doubt he can do it every time 20 years after he wrote it. Mm.
It's
and
one
like if
you
listen to recent Eminem, like, it's a challenge.
I know, but I'm saying it's one song you're performing live. Like, it shouldn't be. I don't know. That's at least.
I just don't think it's the time and place for this.
For that sort of, yeah.
I think the Oscars are kind of stuck between trying to be the biggest televised event outside of NFL in America and being like a celebration of film.
Speaking of, this took place the week after the big game.
Super Bowl, yeah.
Super Bowl.
Yeah, so it's done earlier. I assume to like try to attach itself to larger events and it still went down like 12%.
Yep.
Mm.
Which like, I think they just need to embrace that like all ratings for televised events are going down in the world and just kind of embrace what they are. And just be that really well.
Yeah.
And not try and, like, dish around, have Billie Eilish show up and constantly have a camera on her to see what her reaction to Maya Rudolph is. It's like, that's not why she's here.
That's the other thing I loved. It's I think it was when Eminem showed up. It was Billie Eilish.
No, that was like, when Maya Rudolph was singing.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah.
Tom, you've put here that you took away from the Oscars that the Academy has learnt its lesson after what happened last year.
Yeah, so Green Book, it was a very contentious
That's
choice.
What you're referring to.
for Best Picture. But I think beyond that, you know, it made great strides towards diversity. Even though there weren't that many non-whites in the nominations, particularly the large categories. You know, the fact that they gave awards to Parasite, gave an Oscar to Taika Waititi, gave them to all of these, like, Big Hair, Hair Love.
But they gave it because they deserved it. Had they given it purely for diversity reasons, I don't think
I don't think they've ever done that.
Yeah.
Like, I think the Oscars have only, like, given it to someone that that didn't actually deserve it. It's just when it's someone that did something really well, like, 20 years beforehand. Like Al Pacino winning for Scent of a Woman, that sort of award.
You've put here, Darcy, again, Oscars as a telecast was a mess. It was essentially the Grammys, which is a comp no one wants.
Well, no one wants the Grammys. And they, yeah, there was like 14 musical performances in a 3.5-hour show about film. I did like the montage of score. Mm. That was a nice addition that they don't usually have. I think stuff like that would be a more welcome thing than, yeah, Eminem showing up.
It was incredibly long as well, like the awards. I know Al Pacino's mentioned...
Yeah, an extra half hour.
Yeah. I know he mentioned when he went to his first Oscars. I think he was saying this on Jimmy Kimmel recently. I think I might have said this to you guys. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
you said this
to us off.
That he was speaking to Jeff Bridges and he's like, he didn't know who he was. And then he's like, oh, so, you know, how long does this have left? And then Jeff Bridges is like... Al Pacino thought it went for an hour, and then Jeff Bridges told him, you know, it goes for 3 hours. He's like, are you serious? Like, that's sort of, yeah, that's...
And
it's
a lot of, like, sitting face forward at an event and not being able to leave, and there's a camera always on you.
Yeah.
Like, that just seems like a stressful entire night to have to go through.
Then again, they're worth millions, so who are we to complain? Mm. next, we've got our most memorable Oscars moments. I put here, I'd have to say Parasite winning. And the audience's insistence that their speech not be cut off.
Yeah.
Also, but I love the speeches from the winners of the more technical awards, as they were to the point, didn't dance around politically driven comments. That's what I was mentioning that earlier, that I really appreciate that with those sort of awards. And I put here, I can't forget Shia LaBeouf and Zach Gottsagen presenting an award and making a first for disabled people presenting at the Oscars.
That was fantastic. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Apparently, he's been like really good for Shia LaBeouf, like mentally in the last...
They're really
two.
Good.
He's
yeah.
like really close friends now.
They're really good friends. I think they've... Yeah, I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but yeah, they've you know, the way that they interact is sort of like in a brotherly way as well. So, what about for you guys? Most memorable Oscars moments?
So, the most memorable moments for me again were Parasite, and I think Taika Waititi as well. I mean, this is huge. I mean, he is the first person of Maori descent to win an Oscar in any category.
Oh, Maori, okay. Not New Zealand, yeah.
Not New Zealand. I mean, Peter Jackson.
Yes, I was going to say.
And, I think there was, and referring back to what I said before, they did have Taika Waititi give an acknowledgement of country. So for those who aren't aware, at the beginning of this very podcast, you hear a voiceover of me saying that we acknowledge and respect the traditional owners of this land. And Taika did something similar, except he adapted it for the American audiences. So he said, we're meeting on the Native American tribes of this. Mm-hmm. And that's something I don't think I've ever seen done in an American telecast.
And it's something like we're kind of getting used to now in Melbourne that, it's like jarring, but like really nice to actually see it happen in America.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
For you, Darcy, most memorable?
I think it was Bong winning Best Director. I think like there was an entire room full of people like so surprised and so happy for this to happen, and like his speech was impromptu. He was like taken aback, but he was still able to conjure the best speech I think of like the last couple years. It was probably my favorite speech that's happened, and like him being able to celebrate how important Scorsese and Tarantino was to like his career, even though he's non-English speaker.
Definitely. I'd agree as well that, you know, acknowledging those guys, and I think Tarantino's helped a lot with Bong's, like the distribution of some of his films.
Well,
I know
he
with
said
as well.
During his speech, "Thank you for putting my movies in your top 10 list." So,
yeah. In your top 10, but yeah, but he's also helped. I know with like theaters in America that he's helped roadshow some of his films. So another great gesture from Tarantino for Bong. Biggest talking point from the Oscars. Now I've put here some have come to mind over the course of this discussion. One being that I haven't written down is a lot of people were talking about Luke Perry being omitted from the In Memoriam video of him not being there. And,
yeah, it's always weird who decides who makes that list. It's such a weird list when it comes out who isn't on there.
Mm.
Like, I think Prince and Michael Jackson weren't on it the years they died.
I think the critic Gene Siskel, he wasn't included, and then Whoopi Goldberg actually gave him a shout-out after the In Memoriam section.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's always interesting. Joan Rivers was another one. She always does red carpet, and when she was omitted, there was a lot of backlash for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And Spielberg presented that as well, so he was. I don't think anyone expected to see him there on the night.
No, I certainly didn't.
I also put here, I think The Irishman not winning anything was a surprise, which you'd mentioned before, Tom. You know, 10 nominations, didn't win anything for like the second time.
It will be
interesting
to see how big like Netflix keeps going until they finally get that Best Picture win.
Well, they've come really close.
They have come close.
They had 24 nominations this year and 15 last year.
Yeah. I think it's really encouraging. I think they might end up bringing more directors onto their platform now.
They definitely will.
For this year, they've got a Charlie Kaufman movie, a David Fincher movie, and they just bought what's arguably one of the best documentaries the last couple of years, Dick Johnson is Dead from Sundance. So they might win Best Documentary Feature again. And I think Spike Lee's movie is going to be on Netflix as
well. Yeah, he's got
a Chadwick Boseman movie.
Yeah, Spike Lee has a contract with them somehow. I can't remember how. Yeah.
So we might have like three of the last like 15 Best Picture
And then we recently saw a David Lynch short as well. I mean,
that was wild.
Yeah, that was
that just appeared on Netflix. Yeah. Like, what is happening?
I mean, I can't see it winning an Oscar because David Lynch has never been nominated or won an Oscar.
He had got an honorary one the day before at the Governor's Award that Laura Dern gave to him.
Oh, right.
So not like an actual.
So he hasn't won or been nominated in a competitive category.
I think he's been nominated for writing for like Wild at Heart, those sort of movies.
Right.
And I wanted to mention just a couple more. Brad Pitt acknowledging stuntmen and the stunt category.
Yeah,
I think that was a good, I guess, something nice of him to do because it is a category that, there's a lot of work that goes into that and, into stunt work and stunt coordination.
I think why they're so stubborn about not adding categories. They always seem to be talking about getting rid of some.
We did have this discussion last year on this very podcast about whether they should consider giving out Oscars or awards for stunt work. And we made the argument that maybe they shouldn't because then it'll encourage people to do more and more dangerous stunts in order to...
I think that was something we mentioned.
Yeah, get their Oscar.
And I also wanted to mention, quite a big talking point, a lot of people saying that with Adam Sandler and Uncut Gems not receiving any recognition, not being in the Academy's sort of general scope of those sort of films and those sort of performances. What are you guys' takes on
He
that?
Won at the Film Independent, which has very quickly become my most anticipated one of that, like the whole group of awards ceremonies. It's just the most fun. The best movies usually win. The Lighthouse gets to win things.
Mm.
And Willem Dafoe had a great speech. Adam Sandler had an amazing speech.
That's what I was going to say.
The Safdie brothers spoke over the top of each other, a la Uncut Gems, in their speech. That was incredible. The Farewell actually won
something.
They won the main award. Like, that's the award show I think that's becoming more prevalent now.
Mm. And the biggest talking points for you guys?
I think we've covered them just about. I mean, we mentioned Parasite, you mentioned Diversity.
Any snubs that you guys were...
The Farewell. I mean, not being nominated in a single category, and it was one of the most beloved movies of 2019.
Mm.
I mean, I just can't fathom how the Academy could overlook that.
And it was annoying as well, because it was like, that's what A24 put all of their resources into. Yes. So like all the other A24 movies, like The Lighthouse, didn't get campaign for Oscars because of The Farewell, and it still didn't get in. Like, that was frustrating.
Mm.
Unbelievable.
And I think that wraps up our discussion then, guys, unless you've got any final points to add.
I'm looking forward to next year.
Next year.
Where I won't be able to take part, actually.
You will be able to take part.
So, yeah, unfortunately, this will be the last year I get to participate in a Film 101 Oscars podcast. But
We'll keep having you back.
We'll figure something out, Tom. Trust me. There's time till then.
Even if I have to lower my voice or, you know, put it up. Disguise the fact that I'm appearing. I don't know. But I know I've said it before. I'll say it again. I really enjoy being part of Film 101. And it's going to be really sad when I have to leave. But he's hoping that we can, you know, have more fun in what months I have left here at Sin.
We will, Tom. I can guarantee that.
As long as great movies keep coming up. Or terrible ones, we talk about them either way. Yeah, let's go see Fantasy Island. Let's go.
I will be seeing that, though. I will go out of my way to see it. And, you know, that caps off our Oscars recap special. We will, again, be bringing more shows in the next coming weeks, hopefully coming months as well, as more films are released, with, you know, Wes Anderson films coming out, and The Tenants coming out as well soon. So there's some big name films. There's obviously some smaller budget films as well that we'll be looking at.
Bob's Burgers movie.
Is that going to get like a theatrical release?
Well, that's...
Could be interesting.
Yeah, because it doesn't have a television home in Australia at the moment. None of the free-to-air networks had picked it up, and even though it's got
I could see Mad Men picking it up.
Oh, it's possible.
Like, that seems
like
that sort of wheelhouse.
But, yeah, aside from, like, a real cult following in the show, there's really hasn't been that mainstream traction that, say, The Simpsons has gotten, or Adventure Time, or any of those animations. So, yeah, it's still slated for release in July 2020. So it'll be,
I feel like,
really
we're getting a lot of June, July, or then, like, November. Because, like, most of these Oscar movies we saw between, like, November and January.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of hate that Oscar movies are now just when the Oscars are on anyway.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Like, I can't... Like, the Joker thing was the only one that was, like, a farewell beforehand.
Mm.
And, like, Get Out the couple years before was a February movie. I kind of want a February movie where I can talk about it being an Oscar winner for, like, 10 months.
Yeah, well, we can only hope, Darcy, can't we, at this point? And, Tom, where can you find us?
Of course, you can find us on Facebook via Film 101 SYN. So that's facebook.com/... Then we're on Twitter as well, at Film101SYN. And you can also send us an email, Film101SYN@gmail.com. Please get in touch with us. We love hearing from you.
We do indeed. And that wraps it up from us today.
Goodbye.